From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 4th day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. U of I Ag economist Gary Schnitke will be here to discuss this morning's webinar related to cover crops. We'll hear more about that. And then we'll take up with Mike Tenora what the weather looks like as we close out our time together. He's at tstorm.net. And we'll hear from Joe Jensen about the odds that the prospective planting acreage figures will change by the time we get to the June USDA acreage report. And we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today at 435 and a quarter, up 3.5. July, 447 and a half, 2.5 higher. In December, up 2 at 473 and a quarter. May soybeans, $11.80, down 2.25. July, 3 lower at 1192 and a quarter on the settlement price. In November, $11.83 and three quarters, down 1. Bean meal up 350. The bean oil, 70 cents lower. Wheat futures, soft red in the July, three quarters lower at $5.71 and a half, and the hard red July at $5.73 for the wheat, up 1 cent. Live cattle futures, $175.85 for 100 pounds, up 25 cents. The feeder cattle were $1.30 higher at $243.87 and a half, and lean hogs were up 25 cents at $105 even. Crude oil, $86.27 a barrel, up 84 cents. Diesel fuel about half a cent higher at $273.07, and the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.79, up 3 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 39,337. That's down 146 points. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net is out of the office or unreachable at the moment. Kurt Kimmel, his colleague there in Normal, Illinois, now joins us. Thanks for filling in on short notice, Kurt. What happened in Chicago today?
It's kind of a mixed trade. We saw some spread activity, buying corn, selling beans, buying corn, selling wheat. The enthusiasm in the corn market was from the weekly export sales report. It was at 948,000 tons. It was shy of that million metric tons, but that was enough to give the market a little bit of confidence. Then also, too, we saw a sales announcement of 152,000 tons of corn being sold to Mexico. So that was kind of the fundamental event to give the market a little bit of a pop here as we traded throughout the session. Overall, the technical picture is kind of wrapping up as sideways trend here. It kind of looks like this May corn's got some support at the 425 area. Then you get back up towards 450, kind of a little bit of resistance area. So we'll see if the technicians want to come in and give the corn market a little bit of sort. Beans just kind of struggled. We saw reversal of the spread activity in the products. Meal was up 350 a ton, but bean oil down 70. So the bean oil market kind of took a little breather in through here. There's been a little more enthusiasm in the bean oil side here as the world vegetable oil market, palm oil market, you know, has been relatively strong, trying to give the U.S. bean oil market a little bit of support. But overall, just kind of seeing some consolidation take place. Bean sales were disappointing, 194,000 tons. That was below the low end. The low end was 200,000 tons. So just no real export momentum there. As we move forward and through here, we'll see what next week's monthly supply demand report. Then on the bean side of the equation there, we'll see what the monthly crush report shows, because it's going to be important to continue to watch these crush numbers stay strong to kind of offset what we're losing in the export side of the equation. Between now and next Thursday's supply demand report, we'll see if the Sunday weather pattern holds true and see another rain event on East on Sunday since we saw some rain here last Easter Sunday, Todd.
Yeah, so those rain events, not only here in the Corn Belt in central Illinois, but across a large part of the Corn Belt. Not a delay for any reason, but it's early in the season and farmers would like to get moving. Given all of that, USDA's numbers showed that twice the amount of corn as usual had been put in the ground, rather 2% rather than 1%. I suppose most of that was coming in the Delta and Texas. I didn't really check those numbers out. What are farmers telling you about the early season and the rainfall events that they've had and how that is changing their soil, subsoil and topsoil moisture levels at this point?
Well, the moisture or the planting's progress has been in the Waco, Texas area. I had a firsthand report from our good friend Dan Zwicker there and said this corn crop's in the ground and it's off to a good start. He says his yard's green and he's going to have to change the oil in his mower because the south is definitely in fairly good shape in through here. They've been wet in some areas, but the patterns give them a chance to get some planting progress or field work done. Locally here, I dumped out about an inch and a half. We've just kind of been missing the rain here, a tenth or two here and a tenth or two there. We're seeing a situation where a lot of this moisture is welcome, particularly in Iowa, that northeastern part of Iowa. They've just been bone dry forever, so every little rain event's giving producers a little bit more confidence in wanting to get going here. Now they've got a little moisture to work with. The key moisture pattern will be as we move into the growing season. But when you look at that 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day pattern in through here, it's going to be warm enough to help dry some things out, but yet some spotty shower activity to help things get germinated and going, Todd.
Hey, thanks much.
You bet. Take care.
That's AgMarket.net's Kurt Kimmel. Thanks to him for joining us on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world online at willag.org, willag.org, where you can just click and play the Closing Market Report Commodity Week and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast, or you can search it out in our favorite podcast applications, including Apple, Spotify, and now YouTube podcast as well. Look for the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, along with the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast. One of my favorite ways still, visit the website, willag.org. That's willag.org. Earlier today, University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnicke and the water quality specialist from the Illinois Corn Growers Association, Laura Gentry, hosted a webinar for the FarmDoc team related to precision conservation management. I asked Gary to tell me why.
So we did a deep dive into cover crops, and I identified those systems that are the most profitable. And that's what this webinar is about. And it varies whether we're planting in or going to be planting soybeans next or going to be planting corn next. If we're going to be planting soybeans next, a fairly standard system has arrived. It's cereal rye planted at harvest with soybeans planted early and the cover crop or cereal rye terminated near the time when the soybeans are planted. For corn, there's three systems that show promise, but we're not as far along the way of with profitability in corn as we are on soybeans.
So you're pretty satisfied with the recommendations related to soybeans and managing risk and profits in that particular program?
Yeah, we have a pretty standard system that seems to work. We're not that far in corn.
What are the issues in corn?
So corn has a number of issues. Some of those are agronomic. Corn doesn't stand stress or stress to it as well as soybeans, and the cover crop often scavenges nitrogen, which is needed by corn. timing is an issue, and also cost associated with cover crops in corn are higher than on soybeans.
I take it you have probably compared these to other kinds of cropping systems. How do they do?
So if we're looking at soybeans, we can come close to having the same profitability as a one-pass tillage system in soybeans or no-till. We still haven't seen any yield increases with cover crops, and cost reductions that are associated with cover crops don't totally cover the cost of planting the seed and the method for planting for soybeans.
If you are recovering some of those costs from an outside source, does it make sense?
Yes. If we, and many of our more profitable producers are using such programs as from NRCS, EQIP, and CSP. And then there are several programs with PCM having a number of those that make payments outside those NRCS programs.
If people want to learn more about this, do they go to the Precision Conservation Management website?
Yes. If you go to the Precision Conservation Management website, which is headed by Illinois Corn Growers Association, along with the Illinois Soybean Association and a number of other groups, you can find our publications there.
Hey, thank you much, Gary.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to watch the webinar that we've been talking about, you can find it on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. If you'd like to learn more about precision conservation management, you can do that at precisionconservation.org. Oh, and I'll post the webinar, because it's a YouTube video, into the willag.org website today. Now joined by Joe Jansen, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois, a member of the FarmDoc team. And on FarmDoc Daily right now, you can see his latest article in the Ag Market Insights portion of the program. It's entitled, Can Lost Crop Acres Be Found? That's a fun one, because prospective plantings report was last week, Joe, and we lost, 2 million acres of corn and soybeans, more than that, if you look at the principal acres. What did you write about?
Yeah, we want to think about sort of where do we go from here. We all saw the prospective plantings report results, which showed, principal crop acres in the U.S. down significantly year over year, about 6.3 million acres relative to 2023. Corn and soybean combined acres down about 2 million acres, both relative to analyst estimates and maybe sort of where USDA had those numbers pegged back in its Ag Outlook Forum numbers in February. And so I guess the question is what's the possibility that we kind of those acres come back in either the June report or later on in USDA's later estimates of U.S. crop acres? I'd say the big takeaway finding is that, all of those acres are unlikely to come back. We typically don't see big increases in aggregated crop acres, things like, combined corn and soybean acres or principal crop acres, relative to the numbers that we get from the March report. The March report is informative about sort of the size of the overall acreage pie.
Well, because you're an ag economist, you do the numbers. What does the history look like, and how do you support that the acres are not going to come back statement?
Yeah, so we look at the size of acreage increases in the past relative to USDA's March numbers. So assuming that, this year will be in some way like the past, that things haven't sort of totally changed completely, what are the size of typical increases that we see? And looking at, say, the corn and soybean acreage numbers together, we see that, the biggest increases tend to be not more than, about 1% of the size of overall combined corn and soybean acres. So we can increase about 1% from here. That would be a pretty significant increase. We've only exceeded that maybe a couple of times in the last 25 years. So it would be, to get back to our sort of the level of acreage for corn and beans that we thought we had prior to the report, We'd really need to see kind of a historically very rare event.
Yeah, so it's not to say that the acreage doesn't change from March to June, but that it doesn't usually change by very much. And the stats that you put up appear also to say that when they do change, if there's a change and it's to the downside, it's likely to be bigger than any change that takes place to the upside.
Yeah, and that's really just a function of the fact that we can have prevent plant kind of come in, hit us, and really change those acreage numbers to the downside. So that is a possibility. And we will see, you know, it does look like we have, you know, pretty reasonably good spring planting conditions right now. But that's not to say that we couldn't have a prevent plant event in the future, even this year. But that's what drives those big acreage decreases. And we don't have sort of a corresponding event to the upside where we all of a sudden find a whole bunch of additional acres.
When you think about it in context, then, what are the implications for supply, demand, and price?
This does provide a little bit of support to the market. We saw prices jump about 15 cents in new crop corn futures on the day of the report last Thursday. Now, we've given up some of those gains in the last few days, but I think overall, you know, a 90 million acre number for U.S. corn acres does kind of give a little bit of support. It means that we're not kind of getting to those sort of extreme scenarios of building supply in the next year, where we might go from, say, you know, where we're at right now, about 2 billion bushels in ending stocks to a number that's closer to 3 billion bushels next year. We're kind of, you know, tempering our expectations of that supply build. Of course, and you mentioned, you know, that the acreage can adjust. And I think the one sort of maybe wild card is, you know, shifts in acreage to specific crops. And we have seen some pretty big swings in, you know, corn acres relative to soybeans or soybean acres relative to corn between the March and the June report. And that's still sort of a place of uncertainty for the market going forward.
We'll keep track of it with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Joe Jansen, agricultural economist, a member of the FarmDoc team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. You can find his article titled "Can Lost Crop Acres Be Found?" on the homepage at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Mike Tenora now joins us. He is the president of T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online to help us take a look at what's happening in the growing regions across the planet. Hi, Mike. Let's begin in Brazil. How is the second crop or Safrinha corn setting up to go into the dry season?
Well, they have some dry pockets out there, but they're not too significant. And the most important thing to keep an eye on are a number of cool fronts that are moving through. Each of these are projected to produce some decent rainfall for that crop. So we think that by the time we're in the middle of April, we'll have pretty good soil moisture in place for it. Now, rains do rapidly diminish over the last half of April and the first half of May, and then is completely dry basically from the middle of May all the way through the middle of September. So the dry season is coming up, but the way it looks now, we're not going to have too many concerns as long as we get all of these rains over the next 2 weeks. We'll still need one more after that at some point later in April and or in early May. But as long as we get that, their crops should be fine.
Here in the United States, the spring planting season has begun. Can you tell me about the Delta region and then work your way into the Midwest for corn and soybeans?
Well, we've seen a lot of rain over the last couple of days, as you know. It's also been pretty cold here recently. All of that is going to end once we get into next week with a lot warmer weather. But our bigger concern is that there's more rain on the way. So even though the Mid-South will be fairly dry over the next 5 days and there will be some corn and planting taking place, corn and soybean planting taking place, the potential issue is that we have another system moving through around Tuesday and Wednesday, so just about 5 to 7 days out. That'll probably produce a pretty decent rain across that region. And even though weather more than 10 to 14 days out is difficult to project, there's a number of systems that still linger off to the west beyond then. So we think that this stormy pattern that we're in for the Mid-South and for much of the Corn Belt, is essentially going to continue in some fashion. So we don't look for rapid drying once we get into mid-month, but the storm pattern might relax just a little bit once we get a couple of weeks out. But again, that's all getting pretty far into the future. In the near term, the next week looks pretty stormy still.
Have these storms been productive as it relates to the soft red winter wheat crop in the Midwest? And then maybe you could talk a little bit about the hard red as well.
Well, they've certainly helped soft red winter wheat. Going back about a month, we were a little bit concerned about dryness, but that's all kind of been wiped out here over the last few days. And again, with more rain coming up next week, we don't see too many concerns for that crop, with the coverage of dryness pretty low on soft red winter wheat. The other crop is hard red winter wheat, and that's where it gets a little bit dicier. About half of that crop needs rain, and that's mainly in Colorado, Oklahoma, Texas, and southern Kansas. So we need to see some big rains there. At this point, we are going to see some rain next week that will come in on Tuesday and Wednesday when a pretty large system moves across the plains. But the tricky thing this far into the future is that the exact speed of that system is the key to everything. If it moves across nice and slowly, that will draw in tropical air from the Gulf of Mexico and produce a nice big rain for them. If it comes in pretty quickly, well, that won't allow that setup to develop and it'll move into a dry air mass, and you'll only see a little bit of rain. That's always the tricky thing about forecasting weather in the plains. The exact speed of these systems are very important, much more important than in Illinois, where it'll either hit tonight or it'll hit tomorrow, but either way, it's going to hit. Out there, that speed really matters, and it's a little bit too early to say, but in the end, we think that we'll still see some dryness by the time we're a week out from now, but it probably won't be as pronounced as today.
Let's stay with wheat, but we'll move to the Black Sea region. Russia is the primary exporter of winter wheat and other wheat crops to a lot of the world. What are the expectations for their crop this season?
Well, they had some pretty great rains over the course of the fall and the winter. Now we're in the springtime and things have changed. It hasn't rained very much over the last 2 months, and we're starting to see some real dryness numbers shoot higher on the proprietary data that we collect. In fact, about 80% of that crop was drier than normal over the last 30 days, and that's the highest proportion of dryness in any period of April or May going back to 2019 and beyond. So we have a level of dryness here that is more significant than anything we've seen in more than 5 years. We did see some rain over the last 24 hours, so is alleviated that situation a tiny bit. But as we move forward, there's not much rain in the forecast. A pretty large upper-level high is going to linger across western Russia and Ukraine, and that will keep temperatures warmer than normal. It'll also keep it fairly dry. So their wheat is not sensitive yet. It'll be sensitive once we get later into this month and especially next month and even into June. So there is time for things to change. But as it stands now, Todd, they need some rains. They need some pretty big rains. And if these don't start to show up in the next 3 to 4 weeks, this will be a big topic.
Hey, thank you much, Mike.
Yep, thank you.
You're welcome. That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. He joined us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, where you can listen to our programming anytime you'd like. Just click and play from the website or hit the podcast tab. And you can subscribe to the Closing Market Report Commodity Week and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy Podcast, or just search them out in your favorite podcast applications. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.